Fashion Emergency Hotline.
Help! I got rid of all my clothes.
Breathe and explain.
During Fashion Week, everyone looked fantastic, so I decided I needed a new wardrobe.
Well, strut to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yes, they have gorgeous floral tops and super on-trend pixie pants to turn your sidewalk into a catwalk. And right now, pixie pants are just $25.
$25?
Yep. Right now, pants and tops at Old Navy are 30 to 50% off.
30 to 50% off? Amazing. Thank you.
Don't thank me. Thank Old Navy.
Valid 9/15 to 9/23. Excludes denim and active pants.
Around the world on our free mobile app and online at equestrianlegacy.net.
I am so glad our trails have crossed. Oh, the joy you bring to me. And as I look upon each face, such kindness there I see. I wish for you the love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Our trails now go their separate ways, and life goes rolling on. I hope our trails will cross again before God takes us home. We share the wondrous love of God, a love that never fails. And as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Yes, as we travel life's long path, I wish you blessed trails. Blessed trails.
Good morning. I am Belinda Gale, and welcome to Blessed Trails. I am so delighted to be your host as we visit with interesting and diverse guests. We also have the honor of featuring our guest gospel, patriotic music, and sometimes poetry, most all of which has a definite Western flair. Today's guest is a dear friend, Mark Bedore. Now, Mark is a man who has a heart for the West and has made it his mission to share it with the world. Before we bring Mark on, let's kick off the show with one of the consummate cowboy singers, Red Steagall, singing The Narrow Trail.
I am a cowboy with a new direction, making my way up a narrow trail. I've dodged the rock slides, climbed out of canyons where careless riders falter and fail. I rode the wide trail where the herd had traveled, where the grass was lush green and stirrup high. But the wide trail leads to a sun-baked desert where the heat will scorch you and the rivers dry. Someday I'll hear the trail boss calling, hitch my old pony to the gatepost rail, and I'll be part of that last great roundup if I stay true to the narrow trail. I once was lured down a deep dark canyon by a whiskey bottle and a harlot's smile. I didn't wake up till I reached rock bottom. The climb to the top was the longest mile. Someday I'll ride through those wide green pastures where truth and kindness and love prevail. It's there I'll meet with my old compadres who like me have stayed to the narrow trail. Someday I'll the trail boss calling. Hitch my old pony to the gatepost rail, and I'll be part of that last great roundup if I stay true to the narrow trail. Someday I'll hear the trail boss calling, hitch my old pony to the gatepost rail, and I'll be part of that last great roundup if I stay true to the narrow trail. And I'm sticking to the narrow trail.
Oh, love Red Steagle. Well, Mark is a fascinating man that the Lord brought into my life early in my career. In addition to working in television, his passion for the West drew him into writing and photography. Now, Mark is a contributing writer for such prestigious Western magazines as Cowboys and Indians, American Horse, which is published by the American Quarter Horse Association, The Paint Horse Journal, Northwest Travel, Montana Magazine, and many others. His writings and photography have been actually published into two great books that we'll talk about later. And most recently, he has been working to merge his two loves, television and his love of the West. And that all sounds pretty exciting, and I'm eager for us to hear about it. But for me, the very best thing about Mark and his lovely wife, Marilyn, is their unwavering love of and trust in the Lord. They are both so inspiring. I love them dearly, and I am so excited to bring to you today, Mark Bedore. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, Belinda, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I don't know how come I haven't had you on the show sooner.
Well, it's an honor. It's an honor to be here.
You're so sweet. Well, God, you know what? I realized that, like so many of my friends, when we get together, we spend a lot of time with you and Marilyn. I mean, given that we're always both of us on the road, but we really try to make a point for our paths to cross as often as possible and spend time together. And we've stayed in your home, but I realize we're always either talking about music or we're talking about your latest adventure or my latest adventure. And I haven't ever really gotten to know about Mark as a young man, as a kid, and you know what your background is. And so I'd like to spend a little bit of time on that this morning. So can you tell us a little bit about where you were raised and what your childhood looked like?
Sure. I actually grew up in the Minneapolis area, Minneapolis, Minnesota, a suburb of Minneapolis called Minnetonka. And born in 55, grew up watching the Westerns, Gunsmoke, Bonanza, all that kind of stuff, Rifleman, which is still one of my favorite shows. And So I always wanted to be a cowboy when I was a kid. There was a riding stable in the area that I took a couple lessons at. I had a high school buddy that had a couple of horses. We used to ride some, not near enough. And so kind of led the normal suburban life. And then I had a high school teacher who was from Montana. Her father owned a 26-square-mile cattle ranch in eastern Montana. And the summer after I got out of high school, she set me up with a job with him on this big cattle ranch, which was actually very – well, you'd think that was – it was cool to get to go out there. You know, I took the train out to Glendive, Montana, they picked me up, and the ranch was north of Glendive in a tiny little town called Circle. And I guess what was disillusioning about it is I did very little riding. I spent most of that time in a tractor plowing summer fallow. So we rode a couple of times, and I did learn how to drive a stick shift in a pickup truck. On our way out to the tractor, I think I scared the rancher half to death, but we didn't have any wreck. I can remember, pointing out some, like, wow, look at that den of foxes over there. And the guy would go, well, thanks, we'll have to go out and kill all those things. It really did work from sunup to sundown, literally, you know, throwing hay bales and all this stuff. And then on Sunday, you had the day off, you'd sort of just... and he didn't make any money, and the rancher told me he didn't make any money, and it was sort of like, well, that's not going to work. So then I went to college, and when I was in college, long story short, I started out as a forestry major because I was interested in that, but had no interest in chemistry or biology, which is what forestry is about. And so I went to a small state school in northern Minnesota called Bemidji, Minnesota, and they had a television program. So the TV program did a news show twice a week on a cable station that they controlled. So that's where I got introduced to television. And at the TV station, you could anchor and do the weather and go out and do stories. And it was the only way you really learn how to do television is by doing television. You really can't read about it. You got to do it.
Right.
It's kind of like
right.
playing the guitar. You know, you got to pick it up. And play it.
Can't just read about it. This is right. true. Wow. Well, we're going to talk more about your career in television, but if that's interesting, I've always wondered how that connection happened. But before we get too far into that part of it, I would love to, now you and Marilyn are both just wonderful Christians, and you host a Bible study in your home, and I visited your church with you all, and we talk about the Lord a lot when we're together. And so how did that journey happen in your life? Was it, were you raised that way? Did it happen at some point? Tell us about that.
Well, I was raised in a Catholic family and went to church every Sunday, and I was a troubled kid in suburban Minneapolis. I was in some, I like to sort of, when you say troubled kid, you know, today that has different connotation. We weren't running around pointing guns at anybody, but I was in trouble with the police, and I had friends that were involved in pot and stuff like that. And,
right.
We got busted for breaking into a model home. I'll tell you just a little how crazy we were. We used to go out into the woods near my high school to smoke cigarettes, and we meet this guy out there who's living in a lean-to. Tell you the story quickly. We decided to break into a model house and stole the carpet off the floor to help build this guy a little hut. And then we actually even cut out the article in the paper about the break-in, thought that was kind of funny, until one day I'm sitting in class and get called down to the principal's office, and there is a couple of plainclothes police officers who say they want to talk to me about a little burglary, which I'd completely sort of forgotten about. And they said, "Oh, really? Don't you know something about a little carpet theft?" And anyway, so I was way on the wrong path. Well, that was in the early 70s, 1971. And that was I don't know if you remember the Jesus Revolution.
Right, right.
Early 70s. There was a Christian coffee house that in our area that my older sister started taking me to. And that's where I was. And they had some great music down there. There was a blind guitar player who was just this amazing singer. He used to do a lot of John Denver and Peter, Paul, and Mary and stuff. And it was just this really cool, non-denominational Christian coffee house that we used to go to on Friday night. And that's where I sat down with somebody one night, and they explained to me what was referred to and still is today as the four spiritual laws, how we're sinners and God loves us and sent his son to die as a sacrifice for us, and that Jesus is the bridge between us and Father God, so we can have a relationship with him. I grew up believing in purgatory, and I wasn't like so good, but I wasn't bad enough to go to hell and all that stuff. And the way a lot of people think. And so at that coffee house, I accepted Jesus as my savior, and it radically transformed my life, like instantly.
Wow.
I quit smoking, I quit swearing, I quit hanging out with these guys, but it only lasted for about a year. I didn't really, many of your listeners of faith know the story about the seed on the path. Some of it falls on the rocks, some of it falls on the trail, some of it falls in good soil and takes root, but I didn't take root. So after about a year, I remember saying the prayer basically on my way home on my bike one day. I said, "Lord, I want to run my own life. So I did for the next 20 years till I was about 35, and then found myself in turmoil once again. Not in any trouble with the law, but just kind of wrecking my life. And I was down on my knees, and I had been engaged to a girl and broken up with her, and I quit my television job, thinking that was the right thing to do. Anyway, my life was just kind of a wreck, and I came crawling back to the Lord, and He accepted me. And that was the early 90s, about 25 years ago. So I used to accept Jesus as my Savior every morning and commit myself to Him every morning. And at the time, I was like a two-pack-a-day smoker and sometimes three. I was living in Sacramento, California at the time, and got plugged into this great non-denominational church, and people were very welcoming and accepting, and the pastor, I used to meet with him. I had an outside sales job at the time, and I'd go in there and talk to him and tell him about, oh, what a disaster my life was, and it was all, and he told me that may be true, but the Lord can take a thread from here, a thread from here, a thread from here, and weave together a whole new life. And that's what happened to me in the coming years. I had learned the basics of writing, photography, writing stories during the time I'd spent as a TV news guy. And then the Western magazine writing just took those skills and used them in a different way. So,
Wow. So the Lord just took you like full circle and utilized everything you'd gone through to create a whole new life for you.
Yes. But it wasn't easy. It was a hard slog. I was really alone physically alone. I know God is always with us, mm-hmm. but I was a single guy for a long time and had some habits to get rid of and I didn't get rid of them. I always give credit, like, for example, to quitting smoking. I went to the class, you know, the lung cancer class. You watch people die of lung cancer, and the American Lung Association runs classes, which are helpful. And I chewed that nicotine gum for a long time, which is helpful. But I always give credit to the power of the Lord for breaking that addiction to tobacco, which is, anybody who smokes knows how tough that can be. So.
Oh, gosh, yes. Wow. Well, we're going to hear a lot more about all of this. But first, we want to go ahead and get to a song. And this is one of our up-and-coming ladies that is just tearing it up out there in the Western world. Her name is Miss Trinity Seeley. She's a real-deal cowgirl up in Wyoming, I think, is where they are now. And this is her song, Heavenly Brand.
Saddles up his favorite babe. They ride out in the gray light of day. He gets to thinking of the life that he's lived, the outfits he's worked, his wife and his kids. And he thanks God for all that he has. His glory be thine to my heaven. Under this cowboy hat, I owe it to thee and the heavenly brand. He gets to working and gathering strays. The frost's in the air and they're counting the days. It's been a dry year and they're praying. In the valley below, and he'll thank God for all that he has. His glory be thine to my heavenly dad. All that I am under this cowboy hat, I owe it to thee and the heavenly brand. just one man with two hard-worn hands and a faith in things he can't see. Steward o'er the land, oh, a cowboy is he. It's not always easy, but who said it should be? On mornings like this, when the chill hits the bone, and all of the memories come flooding back home. And he'll thank God for all that he has. His glory be thine to my heavenly dad. All that I am under this cowboy hat, I owe it to thee in the heavenly grand. I owe it to thee in the heavenly grand.
Doesn't she have a beautiful voice? I just love her voice. Have you seen her live before, Mark?
Yes, I just saw her a couple weeks ago at Vaquero Days. Northern California. Yeah, she's very talented.
Yes, yeah, and such a sweet lady. Really, really nice lady. So you had your first exposure to television was through college, and then you actually went into television, right, as a career?
I did. It took me a year to find the first job after college, but I started out in a tiny little town, Mason City, Iowa, where I was the anchor, the weekend anchor, and the weather guy, did sports, was a photographer, did editing, did the chyrons, used to sit at the news desk and cue up the tapes, and I'd read the intro to the story, and the tape would play, and when I'd get up from my anchor desk and run over and queue up the next tape and run back to the anchor desk. So, it was the media capitals of the world. Anyway, I spent a year in Mason City, and then I was in Des Moines, Iowa for about 5 years, and then Chico, California, which is 90 miles north of Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left that in 1988. I wasn't getting anywhere. I wasn't making any money. I wasn't television. You know, it's a common career path. If you succeed at it, you start at a small town, kind of work your way up, and mm-hmm. hopefully you get. And it's kind of a buyer's market, you know, because there's a lot of people that want to be on television. So I don't really understand the economics fully, but they don't have to pay a lot to get people are dying to do it. So
right,
So you can be living in a town like Mason City where maybe an insurance agent is making the kind of living where you can buy a house and raise a family, but it's pretty tough for a, you know, I think I was making $185 a week when I started. So.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. That's like minimum wage almost.
That was 1980. But that wasn't much money even in 1980. So I wasn't really getting anywhere in the business, so I quit and went into sales. And then when I went into sales, I also started doing TV commercials in the Sacramento area. I got an agent, and one of the guys at my station in Chico started hiring me to do spokesman-type spots. Mm-hmm. And I'd done a little acting in college, so was pursuing that path. But sales was difficult, too. That's why if you're good at it, you can make some good money. But I was selling cell phones, and you had to stay plugged into my cell phone network for 6 months. And if you stayed plugged in for 5 months and 29 days and then switched to another carrier, I got a 100% chargeback. So I'd go into I was working as an independent contractor, and I'd go in expecting to get a good check and get nothing. So I was living off my credit cards and going broke and doing some commercials and making progress that way. But not succeeding too well financially. And then one day the phone rang, and it was, long story short, it was this TV station in Battle Creek, Michigan that asked if I wanted to get back in the news business. So
wow. Well, now, when we met, you were writing for, I think, news copy for an ABC affiliate in Southern California. Is that correct?
I moved out here in 1995. Mm-hmm. When I was living in Sacramento, that's when I recommitted myself to the Lord. And when I'd quit my TV job and broken up with my fiance and was in sales, that's when I got introduced to this non-denominational church. And then the phone rang in 1995 or 92, moved to Michigan, was the anchor there. And the church I'd gone to was a Willow Creek style church. Some of your listeners may be familiar with that. They do a little 10-minute drama as part of the service, kind of a little play within the service to illustrate a point. And people would tell me I was a good actor. And so when I got hired in Battle Creek, Michigan, and the people that hired me left, and the new people came and said, "Well, we're going to get rid of you," and they did. But I'd gotten to the point doing commercials in Sacramento where I needed to move to LA, but I couldn't afford to because I was going broke as a salesperson. So I took the job in Battle Creek, Michigan, thinking, darn, I'll never get back to California. Well, when they let me go in Michigan, they gave me 10 weeks pay plus health insurance, and I thought, aha, there's my ticket to California. So I moved to California in 1995 actually to pursue acting. But about the day I got here, I also got a job as a news writer to pay the bills. So I was working the graveyard shift, first starting out at the NBC station here in L.A. I worked a little at Fox. And then in 2001, I went over to KCBS-TV, and I worked for them until about 18 months ago. So when I first got here, I was working midnight to 7 as a news writer. I had an agent, and I was auditioning for commercials during the day and kind of scheduling my sleep around that, and I did get some work, but then I think probably being up all night probably didn't make me real competitive. But it also gave me an appreciation for the acting profession, because that's what it is, people that succeed at it, they study that and work on their craft like anybody else does, mm-hmm. whether it's music or becoming a doctor or whatever it is. There's more to that than people might think.
Right.
So I was working as a news writer, and after 3 years, it was clear to me that the acting thing was not going to happen. I did have some small parts in soap operas, Days of Our Lives a couple times, stuff like that, but nothing that made a career. So after 3.5 years, I moved to L.A. because I didn't want to be like 95 and go, gee, what would have happened if I had gone out there and tried?
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I tried and it wasn't happening, and about the day I realized that, I see this little blurb in the LA Daily News for a college rodeo out at Pierce College in Woodland Hills, and I went out to that and thought it'd be cool to write a magazine story about that. And I also discovered this horseback riding program they had that a lot of people that live in LA have been through. It's really a good program, and it's very inexpensive. It was like $50 for a 15-week course, which included 2 hours once a week on the horse. They supplied all the gear, and then an hour of classroom that emphasized safety. So I was signed up for the horse class, and so I went to the college rodeo in the spring, wrote an article that, you ever remember Grit magazine?
Yes.
It's this obscure magazine out of Topeka, Kansas that's still published today, I believe. Anyway, they published my college rodeo story. Then our college got its horses from an outfitter in the Sierra that loaned the college horses in the summer for the school year, fall to spring when the outfitter wasn't operating. So I guess the college got the horses free, and then the outfitter didn't have to feed them all winter. So that fall, that outfitter was doing a horse drive. So just a week or two after I'd signed up for the horse class, I went on that horse drive. And I watched those cowboys ride and thought, man, I'm going to learn how to do that. Because I can remember the first day of class at Pierce College, the instructor asked us what our riding ability was. And I looked at him and I thought, I've ridden a few times. I said to him, I think I'm a reasonably adequate rider. And he kind of looked at me and said, well, yeah, right. Sure you are. So anyway, I learned in that class what I learned in the classes, I didn't know anything about riding horses. And they taught you how to bridle and saddle and pick up the feet. And in particular, they taught me how to trot, how to move with the horse, how to mm-hmm. pose the trot. Because that's what pounds everybody, you know, that when you first start riding, when that horse starts trotting, you start bouncing. So that's how I learned. And I went on that horse trip and wrote an article about it and sent it to a magazine that was published by the Cowboy Museum in Oklahoma City. They never ran the story, but they liked my writing, and they hired me to come back in June, I believe it was, of 2000, and write a story about the Prix de West Art Show, this big Western art show they do every year.
Of course, yes.
And also, when I was on the horse trip, I met a cowboy poet that you know named Larry Maurice.
Yes.
And he said, this horse drive was in September. He says, you got to come next month to the Lone Pine Film Festival, and which is really cool. And I did that, and I met a Western stuntman named Lauren James.
Yes.
Who had been Steve McQueen's double and did all this stuff in How the West Was Won. And I wrote a story about him that Western Horseman about a year later published.
Wow.
And then one thing led to another, and it just kind of snowballed. And where I'd been, you know, there's a fine line between perseverance and beating your head against the wall. And I'd probably cross that trying to be an anchorman or be an actor, but those doors didn't open, but the magazine writing just took off. And
wow. Cool.
So now, what is it, 16, 17 years later, I've been published in over 2 dozen magazines, hundreds of articles, and a couple of books. And I really, you know, credit the Lord totally, because it wasn't even my idea. You know, this all just, what the pastor had told me when my life was a wreck, you know, about God taking a string or two here and weaving together a whole new life, that's what happened to me.
Wow. What a testimony, and what an encouragement for people who might be where you were, you know, where they just feel like everything's just all kind of falling apart, but that there's hope that all those threads, all those frayed ends can be woven back together into something more beautiful than they ever imagined.
Oh, I always hope. I've told so many people, God will help you, but you got to ask him.
You got to ask. Yep. So did you ask for Marilyn? That's what I want to know.
Well, Marilyn and I met at the Lone Pine Film Festival.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes, Marilyn was friends with Carrie Powell, the woman who founded the Lone Pine Film Festival. She was sort of an adopted daughter of that family, and Marilyn wasn't there in 2000, but she was there in 2001, and that's where we met, and long story short, that's where our relationship started. And she'll tell you this, that I told her, I said, well, you know, if we're going to hang out together, you need to know, you need to be able to ride a horse.
That's a prerequisite.
Well, she was game. She'd done a tiny bit of riding on a farm up in Canada where she was originally from. She spent the first few years of her life outside in the Winnipeg area.
Wow.
But she was game, and she signed up for that Pierce College class like I had taken, and she's gotten to be a real good little cowgirl, and she can lope with the best of them. So,
yes, she certainly can. I've ridden with her, so she definitely knows her way around a horse. She's precious. Well, we're going to go to another song real quick here, and then we're going to come back for more. And we're going to talk about your the dude ranches that you've started going to and how that kind of evolved into your life. But first, we're going to listen to a wonderful song called Soul of a Man by a group called Sons and Brothers.
Darkest night will turn to where the soul of man never dies.
No sad farewells, no tear-dimmed eyes, where the soul of man never dies. Where all is peace and joy and love, and the soul
eternity, where the soul of man never dies.
No sad farewells, no tear-dimmed eyes, where the soul of man never dies. Where all is peace and joy and love, and the soul
across the foam, where the soul of man never dies. It guides and lights the way to home, where the soul of man never dies.
No sad farewells, no tear-dimmed eyes, where the soul
Those guys are good, aren't they, Mark?
Yes, they're great.
Yep, they're fun to watch too. Great bunch of guys. So you know what's really fun is you and Marilyn have gone all over the country hanging out at dude ranches and writing articles about them that you've been, you know, shown up in all kinds of different magazines. And so, I mean, we could spend a whole show just talking about all of your dude ranches and all of the rides you guys have been on. But why don't you tell us, before we go to our next song, why don't you tell us about your favorite dude ranch that you and Marilyn have been to?
Well, that'd be like telling who your favorite kid is. You know, I always tell people
that.
You know, I always describe dude ranches as, because I get that question when I go to a dude ranch and people find out I write about them. They always ask me, "Oh, what's your favorite one? Which other one should I go to?" Every dude ranch I've been to, people fall in love with that particular dude ranch. It's kind of like when you fall in love with your wife or husband. You know, that person has a special beauty and a special attraction, special qualities that are like no other. And dude ranchers are kind of the same way. They're all in these beautiful parts of the country. They all have their own special history. Some of these dude ranches date to the 1860s.
Wow.
And it's a tough business. You know, you're running a hotel, a restaurant, and dude string and saddling up 50 or 100 horses a day. And it's really a lot of work, and it's difficult to find people sometimes today that can do that kind of thing. There's less and less people that want to, there's a lot of people that want to be wranglers. There's not maybe as many as there used to be that can actually do it. So, so my favorite dude ranch, I mean, I've been to, 36 at least, and I've genuinely loved all of them. I tell you, put me on a horse in beautiful country, I'm a happy guy. And it's great for us to be able to tell their story, because dude ranches aren't Disneyland. You know, you don't see them advertised on network TV. They're mom and pop operations. So I've hopefully what I'm able to do is to help the cause, help the dude ranchers tell their story, and help people who've never heard of these places discover them. In fact, one time it was fun. We were at a place in Arizona. I'd written a story about horseback vacations for Alaska Airlines magazine, and we met a guy at the ranch when we were back there who was there because he read the story. So that was cool. And
oh, wow.
I was just on the Chief Joseph Trail ride again this summer, and I did a story that came out this spring and met a young woman who was there because she'd seen my article. So that's very rewarding for me to be able to help the cause a little bit, because they're such great people. And
yes,
people, that world just attracts good people.
I believe it does too. Well, let's go to our next song. And then we'll come back and talk about one of my favorite trail rides that you told me you've been on. I mean, you've been on some incredible ones, but I want to talk about the Buffalo one when we come back from this song. And we're going to listen to When the Cowboy Sings Again by Kimmy Hudson.
Like a friend, lakes that shine like mirrors and ripple in the wind. The prairie rolls forever, and the roundup never ends. And you just know the good Lord's smiling when the cowboys sing again. Drifting higher and higher,
Oh, that song makes me smile every time. It's a good one. So, Mark, tell us about that buffalo ride that you went on, that you were not supposed to be allowed to ride on.
Well, that was the rush of a lifetime. You know, I mean, I look at those old Charlie Russell paintings of Indians hunting buffalo. I go, what would that be like to be riding at a full gallop next to a stampeding herd of buffalo? And one of the things as a writer that some of the state tourism agencies do is they have what's called a fam trip, a familiarity trip, where they will bring a bunch of writers in, and there's no spouses allowed. It's a business trip. They put you on a bus, and you're running from like 7 in the morning to 11 at night, and they show you things in their area to write about. And the South Dakota Tourism Commission does that around an event they call the South Dakota Buffalo Roundup. So I went out there I was one of the writers that got to come, and they run us all over to the Black Hills and up to Deadwood and Mount Rushmore and different craftspeople that we met, all intended for you to write stories about to get people to come to South Dakota. And the grand finale was the Buffalo Roundup. And every year, this happens in Custer State Park, which is in the Black Hills. Custer State Park is 73,000 acres, and they have a herd of 1,500 buffalo. And, of course, the buffalo have babies every year, so they have to round them up because the land can only support so many animals. So they spend, like, 3 weeks gathering from the perimeter of the park, and they push them in. They get these 1,500 buffalo within about 5 miles of this catch corral. And then the last weekend of September on a Monday morning now, at 9 o'clock, there's 60 people horseback that drive these buffalo into the big catch corral where they separate the babies, and then they have an auction a couple months later. But it's kind of like a controlled stampede. And behind the riders are pickup trucks. They're sort of like chase vehicles, and sometimes the buffalo will charge a horse rider, and the pickup truck will try to get in between the buffalo and the rider and that kind of thing. So us riders are standing up in the bed of the pickup truck, bouncing around, trying to take a picture, watching all this. And I'm going, well, this is cool, but, you know, the place to be is on the horse. So mm-hmm. I asked him, I said, no, we never let riders do that. Well, long story short, there's a guy named Bob Lantis, who's an outfitter, who's kind of the head cowboy. And the next year, the stars just lined up right, and they let me ride. He let me use one of his horses, and it was really the rush of a lifetime. And I was a little bit nervous about it, I have to admit, because I actually took some horseback riding lessons in the weeks leading up to that trip because, man, I wanted to be sure I like, was all tuned up for chasing buffalo.
Yeah, you don't want to fall off your horse in the middle of a semi-buffalo stampede, right?
Right. So I'm laying in bed like a couple days before going to sleep and visualizing this thing and visualizing my horse tripping and me getting run. I'm going, no, that's the wrong thing to visualize. Anyway, the big day comes and we quietly ride out behind the herd of buffalo. And Bob Lantis, the head guy, says, hey, you stick with me, which is exactly where I want to be because he's the guy leading the charge. And anyway, the trigger goes off at 9 a.m. and the drive starts. And we're walking, then we're quickly trotting, then we're in a full blast gallop alongside this herd of buffalo. It was awesome. It was really cool.
Well, you have an amazing photograph of that you have blown up and over your fireplace. It's just kind of awesome.
Well, you couldn't have timed it better. The official state photographer for South Dakota Tourism shot that picture, and you couldn't have, like I say, planned that. It is an amazing picture. It's on the cover of my new book, too, so they let me use it. So, but yeah, wow. it was very exciting to get to do that. So
wow. Well, let's talk about your books real quick because you have a book out about your dude ranches, about you've compiled all the writings and drafts for the dude ranches, and then you have a second book that talks about all the various trail rides you've been on. So tell everybody a little bit about your books.
Well, you can see both of them at todayswildwest.com. The first book is called Great Ranches of Today's Wild West. It profiles a 10x12 hardcover coffee table style book that profiles more than 24 dude ranches with more than 200 color photographs. And the second book, the new one, is called Great Rides of Today's Wild West, which has about a half a dozen dude ranches, but it's mostly horseback adventures like the Buffalo Roundup, the mule ride to the bottom of the Grand Canyon. I did a pack trip into the Yellowstone Wilderness. I went to U.S. Cavalry School on the Crow Indian Reservation, and which part of that is to reenact the Custer Battle that they do every June. And so it's about horseback adventures, and all of these things are things that people can go to themselves. And that's kind of what I always try to do when I write a story, is to say, hey, you can go do this too. You know, that's sort of the moral of
right.
it.
Right.
Let people know what's out there, what they can experience.
Right. And your books really are like this huge, gorgeous, beautiful, fun to look at brochure for all of these things. So they can really get a feel for where the dude ranch is. They can really get a feel for these rides and what to expect. And so, you know, anybody who's looking to, you know, take a horseback vacation or a dude ranch vacation or something like that, I mean, the books are just, and they're beautiful to look at. They really are fun to just sit and look through. You did a gorgeous job on both of your books, Mark. They're just wonderful.
Well, thank you very much. You know, after being in the news business for a long time, and the news business is important, you know, but it tends to be kind of, you know, some serious stuff, violent, you know, crime and war and all that kind of thing. I always, one of my mottos is, you know, there's more to write about than who died that day.
Yes.
And there's all this cool stuff going on in the world that kind of stays under the radar that people are not aware of. So,
right.
What I want to do is to sort of shine a light on this cool stuff out there that and when people hear about it, they're excited because they've never heard about it. You know, everybody always compares it to city slickers, and you can have your city slicker. There's all these opportunities for you out there to do that.
That's right. Well, we're going to actually go to a poem, and then we're going to come back and we want to talk about a little bit about the new adventure that you're on, the new project that you're trying to get rolling down the road here, down the trail. And but this is actually, I went back and pulled a wonderful poem that's one of my favorite that my late singing partner, Curly Musgrave, he actually started out, was decided he was going to be a poet in Western music until someone heard him sing and play the guitar. And they're like, yeah, no, you're a singer. But he does have some wonderful poems. And this is one of my favorites called The Line.
I often think of Grandpa, especially now I'm one, you see. But I don't feel wisened by the years as I remembered him to be. He seemed such a gentle giant as I rode upon his knee right behind him in that old slick four that I still use occasionally. But I never quite filled those stirrups or blended with a horse as I remember Grandpa doing. Seems he could truly set a course between some old cow pony's ears. And that horse just seemed to know where Grandpa wanted going and how he'd want to go. So I asked him how he knew some colt would amount to a steed so fine. He just smiled as he rubbed the big bay's neck and said, I just keep my eye upon the line. I didn't quite know what he meant, but there were many other times where I'd find him watching me, then teaching me about eyeballing some new line. Like riding out beneath the stars when a bright moon weren't around, he could teach me how to line it up so's to get to where I'm bound. Then teaching me to drive his truck, he says, Jim, there's roads where there's lines that have to be regarded, else you might incur a fine. And even on our gravel road, you best line up this ride, lessen you want to go nose to nose with that critter coming down the side. Gramps had lines for this and lines for that that he'd tell me all about, and I'd done my best to eyeball all them lines that he'd point out. There was high lines and timber lines, and oh, them sky lines was a sight. And them red lines in his Bible Grandpa read near every night. There was headlines and deadlines. I asked him how they died. And them lines the politicians told. Gramps said, some's flat-out lies, but don't short the line, grandson, said he. For in lines there's structure true, and in structure safety. Then in safety passion, and in passion life for you. So that day I asked old Grandpa, with all these lines to see, which line should be the line most dear? He sort of grinned and looked at me. Then said Jimmy Boy, someday you'll know, for your life will seem so fine as you look back o'er the trail you rode, for it leads right to the line. He smiled at my bewilderment and soon after passed away, and I put away the puzzle of the lines until today, when two grandsons climbed on my knee, demanding song and rhyme, and as I looked into each smiling face, my grandpa came to mind, and I looked back. Well, over 50 years at this trail I've cut behind, and though that road's been rough, it's been worth it all, for it leads right to the line. Yep, that line's right here, the line most dear, just sitting on my knee, and as I once did with my grandpa, these young'uns gaze at me. I must be ancient in their eyes, but there's love that's true as time. So I best just babysit these buckaroos and keep my eye upon the line.
Oh, miss that guy.
I do too.
Miss him. That's one of my favorite poems that he does. Well, you have some exciting new project that you're working on. You want to tell us a little bit about that real quick?
It's a documentary style TV show called Today's Wild West. And it's kind of a magazine show about all things Western. Dude ranches, horse trips, saddle makers, Western musicians, Western art, movies, historic places, Native Americans. We've done stories on like the bank that Jesse James tried to rob in Northfield, Minnesota, which is today a historical museum, and it looks exactly like it did the day they held it up in 1876. We've been, like I say, to dude ranches. We've been on horse trips, trail rides, and so we have very exciting news. We just yesterday, actually, we've been working on this for about 18 months, and just yesterday we got we heard from a television station that's going to run our show beginning in January, and I'm not able to reveal the details just yet, but it's going to happen. And then what we're going to be able to do is to they'll put the episodes on their website after it runs, so anybody anywhere in the world will be able to watch that show. So we're going to publicize the heck out of it and hopefully get
some
magazines to tell people about it too. And I think there's nothing like it on television. You know, there's a pent-up demand for Western, good Western stuff on TV. And it's going to be it's going to be basically a television version of the magazine stories I've been doing for all these years.
So. Wow. That's I can hardly wait to see it. And what you've been telling us about, I know you've been working hard this last year to get this, get some in the can and get things filmed and get it put together. And it's so exciting to see it all put together. And again, tell us, Mark, where people can get in touch with you for your books, for just if they want to get hold of you to hear more about what's going on with your show or anything, where can they get hold of you?
Today'sWildWest.com. And by the way, I have to tell very quickly, just give credit to the Lord. This is for this show, what happened yesterday. This has really been a huge undertaking. Pastor, who's a friend of mine, I said, who has encouraged me on this show. I told him a while back before we started, I said, this is impossible for me I can't for the life of me figure out how to do this. He said, well, that just means if it happens, it's a God thing. We've just seen the hand of the Lord. It's so amazingly clearly just yesterday, just at the exact time, because we either have to get this show going or I have to go back to writing the TV news or something. And just exactly when we needed this to happen, it did. So we see that God is this huge confirmation from God that we're on the right path. So
Wow. Well, I love it. And I have loved having you on this show, Mark. It's been so much fun. And I'm really eager to see your new television show and would really encourage our listeners to take a good look at your books. And I think once they take a look at them and go check them out online, they'll want to have one because they're just beautiful, and they capture a piece of our country it's hard to find. I mean, it's hard to find information on these things in the format and in the complete story of it that you have in your books. And if people have ever wanted to go to a dude ranch or go on one of these wonderful rides, that would definitely be a really good resource and just a wonderful keepsake to have. But please do give my love to your bride. She is just one of my most precious girlfriends, and I just love her to pieces as I do you. And thank you again, Mark, for being on the show.
My pleasure, Belinda. I'll do that, and you say hi to Bob for me.
I will do that. And we're going to go ahead and close out Mark's segment with God Be With You Till We Meet Again by my good friend, Bryn Hill. I love that song. It has such a special, special meaning to me. But, oh my gosh, isn't Mark a great guy? Hardly wait to see the new TV show. And I love how Mark is seeking the Lord at every turn to keep him on the path the Lord would have him walk. And he and his wife have truly turned everything over to the Lord and are giving God all of the glory. In a kind of a roundabout way, that puts me in mind of an interesting and profound experience I recently had during my time of devotion. like so many of you, I diligently pray and I fast and I tithe and I try to fill my life with love and the kindness as we are called to do. And this particular devotion was around a couple of scripture, the first being in 2 Corinthians 5:21. And it says, God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Now, the devotional was pointing out that we are right with God and deserving of all of his grace and blessings because of the extraordinary sacrifice of his precious son, our Savior, Jesus Christ. That it is a free gift. It can't be earned or bought. We all know that, right? I thought I did. But something in the verbiage in this devotional, something in my heart, and I literally had an epiphany of my own walk with the Lord. Without truly being conscious of it, all of those actions I've been undertaking were actually trying to earn God's favor and blessing. I needed to pray so the Lord would do this, or I need to fast so the Lord will do that, or I need to tithe so I will deserve for the Lord to take care of me. Again, while we are called to do all these things, we are called to do them as an act of worship and an acknowledgement that the Lord is the Lord of our lives, not as an exchange for his blessings and favor. And for me, that differential was so slight. I had buried it so deep in my subconscious that I didn't even realize that I was trying to earn all God has for me until this series of scripture and this held up a mirror for me to look into. At that moment, I was profoundly ashamed of my audacity and arrogance, thinking I could earn God's grace. I felt deep shame because of my audacity and my arrogance. I just felt like this priceless gift, this precious gift of salvation and righteousness that his son had suffered and died to give us. It was like I was, in essence, trying to hand him $20 so I would feel more deserving. Incredible, right? But because God is so loving and gracious, that realization was quickly followed by a deep gratitude that the Lord had brought this shortcoming to my attention so I could course correct. And with that correction came a feeling of elation, peace, and a new facet of freedom in the Lord. I don't know if any of you are where I was, but just in case, I would like to share the following scripture with you. And this is one of the things that hit me like ice water in the face. And it's in Galatians chapter 5, verse 4. The Amplified Version really gets down to brass tacks. And it says, you have been severed from Christ. If you seek to be justified, that is declared free of guilt of sin and its penalty, and placed in the right standing with God, if you choose to do that through the law, you have fallen from grace. For you have lost your grasp on God's unmerited favor and blessing. Did that hit you like it did me? When we try to be justified or be made right with God by our good deeds, by doing whatever, we are trying to be justified by law, and that actually has the opposite effect. We are, in essence, diminishing the sacrifice of Christ. Everything we do in the name of the Lord, all of our good deeds should be quite simply an act of worship and faith in a sovereign and all-knowing and loving God. Full of trust in his word, as it is beautifully stated in Jeremiah 29:11, which says, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future. Yes, God's plans for us are his plans for us. Only we can derail them through disobedience. So all we are called to do, praying, fasting, doing good, etc., that is not to earn anything, but is quite simply an act of worship designed to prepare our hearts and our minds to be sensitive to the Lord and to hear his voice as he lovingly leads us. Well, that wraps our show for today. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us the gift of your time. Thank you again to our very special guest, Mark Bedore, for visiting and sharing with us today. And there is never a big enough thank you for my amazing producer, Gary Holt, for all he does behind the scenes to make this show happen. Please check out all of the other fabulous shows on Equestrian Legacy Radio. And remember that they are archived for you to listen to at your convenience. You can even download our nifty mobile app that allows you to take us on the go with you. And if you like our shows, please help us to spread the word by liking us on Facebook and telling your friends about us. Thank you again for joining us today. And until next week, may all of your trails be blessed.
I come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses, and he walks with me, and he talks with me. They're singing, and the melody that he gave to me within my heart is ringing, and he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known.
When you don't go to Geico.com, car insurance can seem intense. Like breakup R&B intense.
I thought you said you loved the sweater that I got you. If you didn't, you could have told me.
Geico makes it easy. Just go to Geico.com anytime to update or check your policy without all the extra drama.
I even had a gift receipt.
Fashion emergency hotline.
Help! I got rid of all my clothes.
Breathe and explain.
During Fashion Week, everyone looked fantastic, so I decided I needed a new wardrobe.
Well, strut to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yes, they have gorgeous floral tops and super on-trend pixie pants to turn your sidewalk into a catwalk. And right now, pixie pants are just $25.
$25?
Yep. Right now, pants and tops at Old Navy are 30 to 50% off.
30 to 50% off? Amazing. Thank you.
Don't thank me. Thank Old Navy.
Valid 9/15 to 9/23. Excludes denim and active pants.